Thanks to the organizers for the opportunity to speak. I think I'm the first non-organizer to speak, so I'm the first one to thank them. All right, so I'd like to talk about Mirkovich-Vilonen cycles. So this is a family of varieties that's important in representation theory, and which generalizes the Schubert varieties. So to begin, I'd like to start by giving my own perspective on Schubert varieties, which will be sort of complementary to what we've already seen. Let's start. So when I say I'm going to just be thinking about the beginning, just Schubert varieties on the Grassmannian. So we have the Grassmannian of K planes and Cn, space of K dimensional, so space of Cn, and we have an action of a torus, and for me the torus will actually be the complex torus. So all invertible diagonal complex matrices, so non-zero entries on a diagonal, that acts on the Grassmannian. And the fixed points, I guess Megumi talked about this. Well, if you have the torus is acting here, then the fixed points are just the coordinate subspaces. So this is the space of K-dimensional subspaces, and the fixed points of this torus action will be when the subspace is made by picking a K, a size K subset of 1 to n, and using those coordinate lines. So I don't know why this is so complicated to say. So the fixed points, let's call it, are W sub sigma. Sigma is in, let's call it sigma Kn. This is a set of K element subsets, 1 to n. So if you're given a K element subset of 1 to n, you can form the span of the standard basis EI1 EIK, where sigma is I1 IK. So these are the fixed points of the torus action. Now, we choose a C star inside our torus T. So which C star? I'm going to choose the C star Z of matrices of the following form. So Z to the n minus 1, Z to the n minus 2, Z 1. So Z. And this C star then acts on the Grassmannian. And then we can look for each sigma and sigma, so for each fixed point of the torus action, we can consider the set of subsets such that the limit as t goes to 0, t dot w is the subspace W sigma. So just as an example of how this works, let's just take k equals 1 and say W is the span of E1 plus E2, then Z acting on W will be the span of E1 plus Z E2, which would be Z. I'm using Z for an element of the torus for reasons that will become clear. This action here is the action by this C star. So the action of Z on the subspace W is E1 plus Z E2 because the, no, it's not at all. It's Z to the n minus 1 E1 plus Z to the n minus 2 E2. Yeah, the complex torus. So the span of Z to the n minus 1 is the same as just Z E1 plus E2. And then as Z goes to 0, this becomes just the same as the span of E2. So this is what happens here. And this limit, while it looks a little bit suspicious at first, the way to justify its sort of existence is you can think this is a map from C star into the Grassmannian, And since Lagrasse mining is projective, it's proper as an algebraic variety, so that map can be completed to a map of P1. And then this limit is just the image of 0 into that map. Anyway, but you can just think about it like this more simply. So this is, so Megumi alluded to the fact, or said that the Schubert cells can be thought of as Morse cells for a Morse function. So this is a sort of algebraic version of Morse theory where you use a C star action for the Morse flow. So you can think of this as the points, the subspaces, the points in the Grassmannian of K-planes and Cn that are attracted to the coordinate subspace W sigma under the action of the C star. So so I've defined Y sub sigma. So the proposition is that there's an alternate description of Y sigma, namely Y sigma is a set of W such that the dimension of W intersect EK. So here EK is the same as W, 1 to K is the span of E1 of K is the number of L such that sigma L is smaller than K. So this is the dimension of that equals that. So okay. In other words, this Y sub sigma is exactly Schubert cell. If you recall, the Schubert cells were defined, Schubert cells in the flag variety were defined by imposing conditions on how your flag met the standard flag. So the Schubert cells on the, similarly, the Schubert cells in the Grassmannian are defined by imposing conditions about how your K-plane meets the standard flag. And now I've defined this Y sub sigma by this other procedure, by looking at a fixed point and looking at the stuff pulled onto that fixed point. And I'm saying that actually it's just the same as the set defined by this intersection conditions with the standard flag. Probably K is a bad choice, because I called K the dimension. W is a K-plane, but this guy should range over the whole flag. Okay. So this is a special case of what's called the Bia Lenicki Virula decomposition. From now on, I'll call him BB. This is one guy with this one name. Decomposition. So, more generally, if we have X, a smooth projective variety, yeah, so Alistair explained that one way to see that the Schubert varieties give us a basis for the cohomology or homology was to think that they were paved by affine spaces. So I'm going to sort of give another slightly different, although basically the same, similar perspective on why they should give a basis for the homology. So more generally, let's just let X be any smooth projective variety, and T, okay, on X, so T is a complex torus. So we have an action of a complex torus, and isolated fixed points. Points will be, let's denote them X sub sigma, where sigma ranges over some index at capital sigma. And choose C star inside T with the same fixed points. I mean, so that the action of this C star on X has the same fixed points as the action of T on X. So like this one, we have to pick it wisely. If we had picked like a different, if we had done something weird like that, then there would have been more fixed points. So then we can similarly let y sub sigma denote the set of x in x such that the limit z goes to 0 of z acting on x is in the fixed point x naught. So this, again, we look at this attracting set for the fixed point x naught, and the theorem of Mr. VB is that y sub sigma is isomorphic to affine space. And essentially, by the argument that Alistair outlined, this proves that the cohomology, the homology, I'm going to talk about homology instead of cohomology, but just because I like it better. But for a smooth projective variety, they're the same thing by Poincaré duality. So the homology of x with coefficients z has a basis given by the classes y sub sigma bar. So if you take the closures of these cells, so I call them cells because they're isomorphic to affine space, if you take the closures of these cells, then the classes of those closures give you a basis. In our case, Grossmannian, these are the Schubert cells, and these are the Schubert varieties. And the same thing works for the full flag variety, too, or any other flag variety. So, question. Well, this is not really what I'm going to address in my talk, but I'd just like to advertise it. If x is singular, so this theory works well for smooth varieties. So if x is singular, then especially if it is singular at its fixed points, or at the fixed points, then what happens? So what I'm going to do in my talk is we're going to examine a certain family of varieties which generalizes the Grossmannians, except that they happen to be singular, mostly. And these varieties are interesting for another reason that I'll explain. And we're going to see what happens. By what happens, I mean what can we say of what happens to this theorem here. So now we can switch gears. So I'm talking about the affine Grossmannian. Okay. So let G be a complex reductive group. So an example of a complex reductive group, one that's been influencing the conference so far, maybe, is the group GLN of n by n invertible matrices. So you can keep that one in mind. And T is that M, the maximal torus. So you can, if G is GLN, then T will be the diagonal. Invertible diagonal matrices. And now we consider, we take K to be the field of Laurent series, and O the subring power series. And we define the affine Grossmannian to be G of K modulo G of O. So this is, in the case of GLN, this is n by n invertible matrices where the coefficients are Laurent series, modulo n by n invertible matrices where the coefficients are power series. So this seems a little bit strange thing to do, so I can try to justify why one should be interested in studying this. But first, let's think about the name. Why do we call it affine Grossmannian? So the reason is, the Grossmannian is Megumi explained GLN modulo the following subgroup that looks like, I shall write it the other way around just for my own purposes. Matrices with a zero up in the top k by n minus k block. So it's a quotient of GLN by this subgroup, which you can think of as being the quotient of GLN by, this is a parabolic subgroup, P. In fact, it's a maximal parabolic subgroup. So in our case, we have G of K, which is not it's not a complex reductive group exactly, but it sort of behaves like let me see this again. So you can think of these you can think of GLN as the group associated to the Lie algebra, little GLN. G of K you can think of as being the group associated to the affine Lie algebra, G tensor K. So this is Lie algebra GLN tensor K. So, and this is called an affine Lie algebra. So you can think of this as being an affine Lie group. And G of O, it sort of plays a similar role to a maximal parabolic subgroup for this group. So that's the reason why it's called affine Grassmannian. Grassmannian because the quotient of a group by a parabolic subgroup, or something that plays a role like a parabolic subgroup, and affine because it involves an affine group. So to study this space, let's introduce a torus action. So we have the group G of K acts on the by left multiplication on the quotient. And inside here, there's the group G. I mean, the matrices over Lorentz series, and inside here you have just matrices. And inside here, you have the maximal torus of T. So the maximal torus of T acts on the Grassmannian. And so we should look at the fixed points of this action. So how to describe the fixed points? Well, one way to get an element of the affine Grassmannian is as follows. So if mu is in the weight lattice of the co-weight lattice of the torus T. So you have a torus T, you can consider a set of homomorphisms from C star into that torus. It's called the co-weight lattice. So if mu is an element of this co-weight lattice, then very confused. I think I wanted to save Z. I think I had a Z and a T and I couldn't decide which one to call that. Z and which one to call T. I think this one's going to be Z, which means that this one might as well be T. Sorry. So if mu is an element of this co-weight lattice, so let's just, as an example, if you have GLN, the co-weight lattice is just Z to the N. So mu is simply a list of N integers. Then this is a map from C star into T, so you can think of it as a, because the coordinate ring of C star is Laurent polynomials, think of it as an element of T of C of Z Z inverse, and that lives inside G of K. Just as an example, in this case, this element, so but we'll call this element z to the mu. So it's really the same thing as mu, but we just call it z to the mu. So in this case, z to the mu is the matrix z to the mu 1, z to the mu n. So the affine Grassmannian is matrices over Laurent series, modulo matrices over power series, and this is the matrix where the entries are in Laurent series, in fact, Laurent monomials. So these, that's the mu, are the fixed points. For the t-action. So there's a moment map. From the affine Grassmannian to the I think this is the real part of the Lie algebra of the torus, or just the coate lattice tensor R. So as Megumi sort of explained, it's sometimes easier to think of varieties in terms of their moment map images. So in this case, the moment map image of the whole affine Grassmannian is not that interesting, because it's actually like onto this vector space. So the map image is just this vector space, this real vector space. But it's a real vector space that comes inside it, there's the lattice, x dot. And in fact, the element, these elements, these 6 points, z to the mu, are sent to mu. So you can sort of picture the affine Grassmannian as being a vector space along with a distinguished lattice, x dot, corresponding to these 6 points. But soon, anyway, we're going to be interested in sub-varieties of the affine Grassmannian, and the sub-varieties will have more interesting moment map images. So earlier I explained that that when you have torus actions, you can use that by means of this Bielinki-Birula BV theorem that I was just erasing or covering up. You can use that to study the homology of the space that you're acting on with that torus action. So our goal is not to use this torus action to study the homology of the affine Grassmannian. I think Megumi will maybe talk about that. But in her next talk. But we're instead going to use it to study the homology of certain sub-varieties of affine Grassmannian, which I'm going to explain. So we consider the action of G of O from the left on the affine Grassmannian. So it's a quotient, so you can multiply on the left by G of K or by any subgroup like G of O. And the following theorem. So the following description of the orbits. So the affine Grassmannian is the disjoint union of the orbit of this group through the point z to lambda. But we don't need to think of all lambdas. We can just think about dominant lambdas. So inside this coate lattice, there's a certain set of dominant coates. And we just need to arrange over that. There's one z to the mu, one point corresponding to a dominant coate in each G of O orbit. So what are these dominant coates? In the case of GLN, it's the set of lambda 1, lambda n, such that lambda 1 is greater than lambda n. So decreasing lists of n integers. The second part of our theorem, so we call this space Gur lambda. So one thing I should have said about the affine Grassmannian is that it's fairly big, which you might expect because there's really an infinite dimensional space of matrices where the entries are Laurent series, because you have lots of things you can plug in as all the coefficients of your Laurent series. So this is a sort of infinite dimensional variety over C. More precisely, it's an inductive limit of projective variety, so it's in the projective variety, or just in scheme. But these things are quite simple. They're just projective varieties over C. It's projective of dimension. So it's finite dimensional, and it's dimension rho lambda. So, well, if you don't know what that is, it's not terribly important, but some formula for the dimension. And the third part of this theorem that's worthwhile explaining is that the closure relation is that the closure of grow lambda is the union over all mu smaller than lambda grow mu, where this is the usual order on weights. So this is less than this if the difference is the sum of positive roots. Okay. So it says this picture, this camera, phi, can be used to understand different subvarieties of Aprangian corresponding. So what does this grow lambda look like? Well, we find out where lambda is and say this is zero, and then we look at the Weyl group orbit of lambda, and then this is the picture. So this is C grow lambda bar is the convex hull of the Weyl group orbit through lambda. Weyl group, in the case of GLN, W is simply Sn. In this case, S3. So, our goal is to study the intersection homology of grow lambda bar. So maybe a word or two about intersection homology. So recall, say X is a variety, complex variety. Then the homology of X is k-dimensional homology is the k-dimensional pseudo submanifolds of X modulo moving them around. Simplified description of homology. And the intersection homology of X is very similar, k-dimensional pseudo-submanifold of X, except which don't need the singular part of X too much. Modulo, the same thing. So what does this mean? Well, so here I said X is a variety, so it's not necessarily a smooth variety. So it may have some singular parts to it, some singular points where it's singular. So this condition says that you have these, so here's a picture of X. There's a singular point. And so elements of the homology, they're just some guys lying in X like this, or maybe lying like this in X, doing whatever it wants to do. And the intersection homology tells you that under certain conditions, guys like this, which meet the singular part too much, are not allowed. It's a little bit complicated to explain what these conditions are. It's not that they're never allowed to meet the singular part, but just not too much. Pseudo-manifold It's just a technical condition. In this case, it doesn't. We could just say, for our purposes, subvarieties will be enough. But it's basically a guy invented so that it captures all the so that every homology class. Well, so the point is, if we said subvarieties, we'd get the Chow group. But I want to actually have the homology. I think for the varieties I'm working with, the Chow group and the homology are the same, so it doesn't matter too much. But strictly speaking, you should have pseudomanifolds. No, I didn't explain what they are. I mean, it's something with a filtration such that pieces of it are not. So why intersection homology, you're probably asking at this point? Well, so for smooth varieties, homology is very well behaved. You have Poincaré duality and so on, you can intersect them. You have an intersection theory. For non-smooth varieties, homology is not as well behaved. There's no intersection pairing, there's no Poincaré duality and so on. So this intersection homology was a theory that was invented to recover some of those properties for singular variety. If X is smooth, then the two are the same, because the condition is vacuous. But why the intersection homology of Gurr-lambda bar? The answer is the following theorem of Lustig, which is called the geometric Satake isomorphism, and it's a very strange result. It says that we should do the following. So we started with a group G, now, which is a complex reductive group. Now, given a complex reductive group, there's a way to produce another complex reductive group called G-check, which is the Langlands dual group. And this group is dual to G in the following sense, that the co-weight lattice of G, or one of the senses it's dual, one of the senses in which it's dual is the co-weight lattice of G is the weight lattice of G check. So just so this duality is not too mysterious, the dual of GLN is just GLN. The dual of SLN is PSLN. So the duality doesn't change things around too much. But maybe an important point is that this X dot plus, the set of dominant co-weights, that becomes the set of dominant weights, which is the essentially the set of irreducible representations. So on this side, X dot plus indexed these subvarieties of the affine Grassmannian, these projective varieties here. Whereas on this side, it indexes the irreducible representations of G-check. And the relation between these two sides is that there's a natural isomorphism. Isomorphism from the intersection homology of Gurr-lambda bar to the representation V lambda. So this is the irreducible representation of G-check, highest weight lambda. So I should give an example of this, this theorem, but first, let's an example. So let's take G to be GLN, and lambda to be the weight 1, 1, 1, 0, 0. So it was supposed to be decreasing, weakly decreasing sequence of n integers, so it certainly is, with k ones here. So then, in this case, Gurr-lambda bar is just Gurr-lambda because there's no dominant weight smaller than this. In other words, not exactly somehow. Yeah. It's inoffensive saying that, but it's somehow more subtle. I don't really want to explain. It's a little bit mysterious, but it is true. There is a way to construct a G-check action on the intersection logic of Berlin-Moore. I'm going to explain more about it. So these Mirkovich-Balonin cycles that I'm going to get to form a basis for it, to give away the punchline. Okay. So suppose we have this as our dominant weight. Then your lambda bar is just your lambda. And so always Gur lambda is just the g of our orbit through the point z to the lambda. So it's always a homogeneous space for g of o. So, in this case, we have the following nice thing, that actually it's a homogeneous space for g, and in fact it's a homogeneous space we know about, because the one with the quotient of g by the subgroup with the black of zeros up here. Namely, it's the Grassmannian of k-planes. Yeah. So this thing is some g of t, that's how I'll denote an element here, acting on z to lambda, so send that to the equivalence class of g of 0. So by setting t to be 0, setting z to be 0. Isomorphism. So, I'm saying, in this case, Gur lambda is a space you know about, well, it's just the Grassmannian. And also we know what the... So in this case, the intersection homology of Gur lambda bar, well, first of all, it's just the same as the homology of intersection homology of Gur lambda, but that's just the same as the homology of Gur lambda, because this is, the Grassmannian is smooth, so it's just the same as the, and so it's morphic, so it's the same as the homology of the Grassmannian. So this has a basis given by the set of k-element subsets of 1 to n. That's what we discussed at the beginning. Namely, the basis, what's the basis? The basis of Schubert varieties. Maybe I should say, more accurately, it has a basis given by Schubert varieties, which are indexed by the k-element subsets of 1 to n. On the other hand, v lambda, so this is just a representation theory fact, is just the representation of GLN on wedge KCN. And this also has a basis given by, also has a basis indexed by the same set, sigma KN. So the basis is EI1 of elementary wedges like that. So in this case, you see they actually are isomorphic because they have each of them have bases indexed by the same set. In general, though, the idea is not... I mean, the proof of this doesn't, like, construct a basis here and construct a basis here and shows that they're isomorphic. I mean, the proof is more theoretical. But what is sort of my goal, or the idea, is... not just my idea, other people's idea, is to understand the basis for this by understanding the basis for this. So in this case... This basis looks simpler than the basis of Schubert varieties over here. And this you learn about in the algebra class. It's a bit more complicated. But in general, describing a basis for V lambda is a very general problem. Whereas here, maybe we can attack it by more geometric means. So that's what I'd like to talk about now. Question, can we find basis for the intersection homology of Gur lambda bar and you need to understand given. So how are you going to do this? Well, so I said this sort of philosophy will be the same as for understanding the basis for the homology of a smooth projective variety. We use this BVD composition. We looked at the fixed points, and we took the flow into that fixed point, and that gave us a basis for the homology. So let's start on that path and try to use it to understand the intersection homology. We'll see what goes wrong or goes right. So for each mu, let y lambda mu, so mu here ranges over the set of co-weights, which is the set that indexes the fixed points of the torus action on the Grassmannian. So I should say that this torus action on the whole affine Grassmannian restricts to a torus action on Gr lambda bar, because this is just the G of O orbit. T sits inside G of O. So we consider elements of affine Grassmannian which limit under torus to z to the mu. Of course, to do this, I have to pick a C star inside the torus. And then I can take the limit as t goes to 0. So I get y lambda mu. Now, if you recall, I'm going to go in the picture. If you recall in the case of smooth varieties, this thing was always isomorphic to affine space. So let's apply it for this value of mu here and this value of lambda. So lambda is 2, 1, 0, and mu is 1, 1, 1. So I'm not going to do the computation, but I'm somehow going to draw the results by picture. And the flow will be this way. And this will be the set of things. The moment map image will be this set, the set of things which flow to mu, live inside Gr lambda and flow to mu. But unfortunately, this is not isomorphic to affine space. In fact, it's actually reducible. So it actually comes in two pieces, one component here and one component here. Fortunately, y and mu may be reduced. So that suggests that maybe we want to look at the components of this. So the closure of a component of y lambda mu is called an MV cycle, a Mirkovich V-Lennon cycle of weight mu. So instead of in the smooth case, to make a basis for homology, we gathered up all the closures of these attracting cells. In this case, we're going to gather up all of the closures of components of the attracting cell. No. Sorry. Attracting pieces. Yeah. No, cells are that word. I mean, in the smooth case, they have it. Here, they're not. Yeah. So the following theorem is due to Mirkovich-Vilonen. It's the collection of all MV cycles gives the basis for the intersection homology of Gerlander-Barr. So moreover, this basis is nice in the following way. So I told you before we had an isomorphism from the intersection homology of Gerlander-Barr to V lambda. Now, V lambda has a weight decomposition. So it decomposes as a direct sum of weights for the dual torus to T. So the torus whose weight lattice is co-weight lattice of T has a weight decomposition into weight spaces. So this, we can sort of force the decomposition by looking at the span of the MV cycles of weight mu. So instead of all MV cycles form a basis here, we can just isolate the ones of weight mu and look at them here. And the theorem is that under this isomorphism, the weight mu piece here goes to the weight mu piece here. This diagram. Just to show you an example of how it's working here. So here I said that there were two weight mu MV cycles, and actually there's one weight mu MV cycle for each other value of mu. So the dimensions of the weight spaces are like this. There's two MV cycles of this weight and one MV cycle of the other weight, and this is exactly the dimensions of the weight spaces of this representation of SL3, or GL3. So this is all very, very nice, but the problem is that we don't have a great handle on these MV cycles. I just said that they're the components, or the closures of the components, of this Y lambda mu. So the question is, can we give a better description? Of each MV cycle. So what do I mean by this? I mean describe each MV cycle using combinatorial data. Another way of putting it is, recall how we described the Schubert varieties as the dimension of W intersect the kth piece of the standard flag is such and such. The Schubert varieties where the W is such that the dimension of that the W met the ith piece of the standard flag was such and such. So can we sort of give some similar independent description of each MV cycle? So this problem has been solved, and in fact it's been solved twice. So there are two solutions to this problem. One is due to Gosson-Littleman,2003, and this appears as that. RT is at 0.0722. And the other one is due to Anderson, Kogan for GLN, and then generalized to all types and extended by myself, 2005. And that's AG /0501362. So in the remaining 10 minutes, I would just like to briefly outline the rough idea behind each approach. Because I think both of them use a sort of general idea that maybe, well, it's kind of interesting. Each idea, I think, is kind of interesting, and maybe could be used in other contexts. So, let's talk about the Gassant Littleman approach. So, the idea is the following, that the problem, the idea is that the problem basically is that Gerlam-Dabar is singular. So they start by constructing a resolution of Gerlam-Dabar by means of a Bott-Samuelson construction. So they build a space that's such that it's 1-to-1 over almost all the base, and this thing is smooth, and the whole thing is TF covariant. Let me write that down. So it's generically 1-to-1, smooth, and they extend the torus action to Gerlam-Dabar, Gerlam-Dabar. Now they say, okay, we want to understand the BB strata. We want to these things I was calling attracting cells, but they're not cells. We want to understand the BB strata, these Y mu lambdas, downstairs. So, and we had a problem that they were singular. So downstairs, the situation was bad because we had one fixed point here, but there was essentially two or more components of the attracting cell. So we look at this point here upstairs, and it may have more than one preimage. Especially, it will in this case, because it may have really a lot of preimages. I mean, not even finitely many preimages, because in the case of these Gerlam-Dabar bars, these fixed points of the torus action are at non-smooth points. So when we go to this resolution, those non-smooth points will be blown up to something. So this thing will have a lot of preimages, but let's just look at those preimages which are torus fixed. So I might as well throw that in here, and this torus action has isolated fixed points. So this torus fixed point here will have a few torus fixed preimages. And now we'll look at the BB strata upstairs for those torus fixed points, and they indeed will be attracting cells because we're in the smooth case. And then we have to study what happens to these guys when they get mapped downstairs. So the recipe is, this is maybe recipe number one. Part two is describe the fixed points upstairs. And of these fixed points upstairs, some of these, some of their attracting cells will get collapsed by this map, but some of them won't and will become components downstairs. So part three is understand which components understand which attracting cells become components. Put the map down. So, in this case, these components upstairs are described by certain paths in the weight lattice, or in the co-weight lattice. Yeah. And the ones that give you components downstairs are the Littleman paths. So this 3 is the set becomes the Littleman paths. So thus, Gassan-Littleman obtained a description of the MV cycles by Littleman paths. Number two is the approach which was started by Anderson and Kogan and completed in my paper. And there's a few ways to think about this one. Maybe the simplest is to say that we want to understand the component, the MV cycles, by looking at their mode map images. So you study this map, and as you can see in this case, the one component is this triangle, the one component is this triangle. So certainly in this case, it does allow you to separate between the components, and then the Mohler map image themselves becomes a combinatorial piece of information that describes the component. So I don't think I have much time to say more about this. So the only comment, just to describe a little bit, is that this leads to some combinatorics. So this led to the combinatorics of Littleman paths, which existed before, and this leads to the combinatorics of what I'll call of BZ Bernstein-Zelovinsky data, which had been invented previously to describe the canonical basis. So this gives a combinatorial link between the Mirkovich-Wieland cycles and the canonical basis through these BZ data. I think other people are probably more experts than me. I think it is a subject people have studied. I'm not an expert. I'm still trying to, I'm not actually 100% sure what you mean by intersectional. Is it something different than the homology? I mean, in a sense, it's not. Well, in a sense, it is. Well, it's hard to say whether it's singular. I mean, I don't know whether to say it. In a sense, it's not so singular because it's a homogeneous space for. Yeah. So in a sense, it's not really singular if you view it that way as a manifold. Yeah, well, this Gurlander bar is singular, but Gurlander, the whole Gur is not, but, but intersection homology of Schubert varieties, I think maybe Alex will talk about that in his talk, presumably. No? Or both Alexes. Even better. But I think there are some connections in representation theory as well. And connections with the intersectionality of the Gur-Lambda bars as well. But I'm not that much of an expert.
The last part of that,
so the point, one thing it gives you is it gives you a combinatorics. So these MV cycles form a basis for the intersectionality, so they form a basis under this isomorphism, they form a basis for the representation. So if you understand very well the combinatorics, then you get formulas for weight multiplicity, tensor product multiplicity, etc. But as I say, in each of these approaches, you actually... So in this approach, you get exactly to this combinatorics, which had been previously developed. So in a sense, it doesn't give you a new formula for weight multiplicity, tensor product multiplicity, but it just gives you a new proof of the formula, a geometric proof. In this case, it does give the combinatorics of these BZ data, but it also relates them to these Mohr map images, which I shall say are called MV polytopes. And so it does give you weight multiplicity, tensor product multiplicity formula in terms of MV polytopes, which is new, but it's in a sense the same as the weight and tensor product multiplicity in terms of BZ data, which Bernstein and Zelinsky had proven. But in a sense, it's in a slightly nicer form, but it's essentially a previously known result, but again, now seen from a geometric side. It's a good problem. So the situation is a little bit strange. In a sense, the Affine-Grassmannian doesn't really exist for general Katz-Mitty groups, but these MV cycles do exist. And I don't know of any work or to use either of these methods to study the MV cycles for general Katz-Mitty groups, but future project.